When you're on the hunt for a new property, there are so many things to consider. Location, amenities, capital growth potential. And if it's for your own home, you may be wondering, is there room for a Zoom room? Or maybe is there room for a man cave? So what are property buyers looking for when they search sites like domain.com.au? That's what I'm going to be chatting about today with Dr. Nicola Powell, Senior Research Analyst at Domain. We're also going to be talking about Domain's 2021 School Zone report, which shows that while our property markets have been going gangbusters this year, house prices in some school zones have skyrocketed by close to 40% over the last year. And that's occurred because there's been fierce competition to get into preferred school catchment areas, and this has obviously continued to drive property price growth. We'll also be discussing other buyer trends that Nicola has uncovered in her research, including what a buyer is looking for in their neighbourhood, the move to regional Australia, and we're going to talk about locations that have significantly outperformed household income. Now, this is the type of information that's going to be valuable to you, whether you're a beginning investor or an experienced property investor. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropol, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
How will the pandemic shape consumer behaviour in the future? Now, that's a question everyone in property is asking, and one I'm going to try and give you some insights into today. It seems like people are falling into two camps. One group are hoping the pandemic will just be a blip in history and life will get back to normal in the next year or two. On the other hand, there's a large group of people, including me, who believe life will be different. But it'll still be great. I think we're going to be looking for different things in our homes, in our real estate, in our neighbourhood. But to better understand what people are searching for when looking for their next home, I'm looking forward to my chat today with Dr. Nicola Powell, Senior Research Analyst for Domain. Now, Nicola's a leading force behind Domain's data reports, and they're the things that keep Australia's public up to date with what's happening in the market. She's well known as a property expert, featuring regularly in broadcast and print media, as well as all of Domain's media channels. Welcome again, Nicola.
Hello, Michael. It's such a pleasure to be on your podcast again.
Fantastic. Thank you. Now, I know that you love the data. You do that all day. And I know your recent buyer demand report indicates what people are looking for, their search behaviour on Domain. You're wanting to understand what's happening and how that's impacting what properties are listing, selling, and price growth. Are there any particular trends that have stood out for you this year as much of Australia has been locked down?
Look, it's been a really interesting year and a bit, really, for real estate. I think, you know, the pandemic really has been a bit of an impetus for change. It has driven a social and lifestyle shift. We've seen a greater interest in outer suburbia in terms of buyer demand, but also into regional Australia as well. And I think, you know, one of the key things when looking at the data and seeing where demand is, we've really seen our suburbs become activated. You know, we're living, we're playing, we're working in our suburbs. And I think, you know, we've all lived through this time where we have spent so much time in our homes and it's put our homes in the spotlight. And I think what that's done over the past 12 months has really driven demand in the housing market. People have either brought forward their decisions or you've changed their decisions, or they've actually realised they're using their home differently and they want different things from it. So it's, you know, when you have a look first of all at keywords, we've seen some really fascinating things coming out in keyword searches. So this is when somebody types in a specific word that they're looking for in a home. So, you know, it has been probably what you would absolutely expect, Michael, you know, study. You know, we all want that additional space or some kind of interchangeable room where perhaps the kids can do their homework or homeschooling, or, you know, we can work from home. Lifestyle additions to a home have become really important. So a pool or waterfront or view. You know, I was even looking not so long ago at people were even searching for homes that were backing or near to a golf course, which really speaks to that lifestyle shift that we have seen. But I think, you know, what we have seen over the first 6 months of 2021 is an unbelievable level of buyer demand in our market. We have seen a strong level of sales. So over 2021, it was the busiest first half year of a calendar year on record across our combined capital cities. So the number of sales that occurred over the first 6 months of this year were 28% above the decade average and 60% above the decade average in regional Australia. And that really speaks to that influx of demand that we saw following lockdowns of 2020. I think in terms of the demand and what we've seen coming from buyers, we have Domain's buyer demand indicator, and that specifically looks at high intent actions made on Domain. So whether it's shortlisting a property or sending an inquiry or viewing, you know, the carousel of photos multiple times, we track that over time and produce an index to help us understand what is the level of buyer demand in the market. And I think what's interesting is the intensity of buyer demand peaked back in March of the year. And that peak was reached for our combined capital cities. In regional Australia, though, what has been interesting is that buyer demand has remained relatively stable throughout this year. It did reach a peak in July. But I think what when you drill down as well to the different capital cities, we saw that peak being reached at various different stages or at different times, across our different capital cities. And that the localised markets in each of our capital cities.
So it's interesting, Nicola, that buyer demand peaked in March, which is interestingly when capital growth peaked. So we're still growing strongly, but it seemed to be that it was around that time of the year that growth was its strongest.
We've seen phenomenal rates of growth in our capital city markets this year and regional Australia. And it's the first time we've got every single capital city rising since the post-GFC rebound, when we saw all capital cities increase over the quarter post-GFC. But it's been consistent, and we've continued to see this synchronized behavior of our capital city markets. But I think in terms of that peak, what we did see is Sydney and Melbourne reached a peak in buyer demand sooner than the other capital cities. And I think we're starting to see that was the start of our capital cities moderating in terms of the level of demand in the market. I think particularly the fact that it peaked sooner in Sydney and Melbourne, where we've got greater affordability issues in those two major capital cities anyway, because that's associated with higher median prices. But we've also seen those two cities see rapid rates of growth, particularly in Sydney. And one of the other interesting things that speaks to that affordability, and I really think it's been affordability that's been weighing on buyer demand. You know, people have done their sums, whether they're upsizers, whether they're first home buyers, and they're just not seeing that the sums add up for them to make that move. In Sydney, it was a bit of a turning point in July of this year. We saw Domain's buyer demand indicator for houses and units on par again. And this followed 5 months of heightened buyer demand for houses compared to units. So I think that firstly does speak to affordability, but it also speaks to the reemergence of investors that we know have been trickling back into the market.
Obviously, one of the restraints for buyers, especially in Sydney, has been the increasing cost of housing. And as the gap between the value of houses and the value of apartments has only widened, I guess some people had to smartly think, well, maybe not those inner city high-rise apartments, but a family-friendly apartment that Sydney's so well known for. I mean, Sydney led the charge in Australia in apartment living. Have you seen any trend in the inner city high-rise towers now that the value of those has dropped a bit, vacancies are high there, and people are trying to on-sell those? Is there an interest in them?
Yeah, so going back to your first point, we've got a record price gap in the Domain house price and unit price series, a record price gap between purchasing a house and a unit across many of our cities. You know, Sydney and Melbourne, Canberra, Adelaide, Brisbane. And, you know, that's because we've seen a greater rate of growth for houses relative to units. And I think what buyers are now starting to view units as is perceived value, first of all, but then secondly as well. I think particularly in those lifestyle locations such as the Northern Beaches, where we've seen phenomenal rates of growth, I think some buyers are just priced out of purchasing a house and they're opting to purchase a unit. And I think, you know, savvy investors as well, particularly in those areas where there is a record price gap between houses and units, I think there is greater interest for units. We've got the reemergence of investors in the market, and that is likely to help support price growth for units, which have underperformed for a while now compared to houses. But I think as well, the second part to your question, you know, we have seen such a disruption to rental markets, and that has been concentrated in our CBD areas. But we've started to see a bit of a turnaround, because I think, you know, when you see an adjustment of asking rents, what it means is you then see tenants follow lower rents. People that want to cost cut and save, particularly when you look towards Melbourne, where you've got inner city, inner Melbourne unit rents back to 2010 asking rents. What that means is tenants, you know, shift because they want to get a better deal. They can afford a better rental accommodation because, you know, prices have adjusted such a lot in those inner city areas. But I think, you know, what we'll see is certainly investors follow that trend as well. And I think particularly because units have underperformed, it will be, I mean, investors will be lured by the prospect of capital growth.
Now, interestingly, COVID has changed where we want to live. And you hinted on neighbourhood a while ago, and I think I've noticed that more of us are now looking back to the way previous generations lived. We got to know our neighbours' names. Our children are playing together. More local businesses have taken a more important role in our community. People are looking for that 20-minute neighbourhood where they can ride, they can drive, they can walk a short distance to get everything they're wanting. They're not needing to live in the CBD anymore, but clearly for home buyers, but even more so for investors, neighbourhood has become very important. Location, getting the right location right, will do a huge amount of the heavy lifting in capital growth. What trends have you noticed in neighbourhood searches?
We have definitely seen our suburbs become activated. You know, when you have a look at our big capital cities, I'm talking Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth, they were typically this, what has been described as a fried egg city. So, you know, you've got the CBD where the hipsters are, and then you've got the egg white suburbia where you live with your kids and you're raising your children. But in a post-COVID world, we've definitely seen our suburbs become activated. We've seen greater search behaviour in those outer suburb locations. Even when you look at the growth in house and unit prices by bedroom, the bigger the house, the more bedrooms it has, the greater the price growth. And that is translates the same trend to units. But I think in a post-COVID world, we are seeing our suburbs being activated. We are working, living and playing in our suburbs. And we're going into the city occasionally, obviously outside of lockdowns. And that concept has been around for some time. As you described it, it's that 20-minute city. But I think we have seen our outer suburbs get a new lease of life. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about affordability issues. And I think for me, one of the biggest game changers for affordability and the unlock is the ability to work from home. People have realized this. And, you know, they are relocating to outer suburbs and even regional Australia. And I think, you know, we often look at our cities and you see that kind of commuter belt. And I think in a post-COVID world where I'm of the view, I don't think we're ever going to go back to a 5-day a week in the city for your job. It's going to be this hybrid way of working. What that means is you can extend your net of how far you're willing to travel if you've only got to go into the city 1 or 2 days a week. I was reading something really interesting recently, and it was describing how our cities will change. And, you know, we will go into this city for work. It might be 1 or 2, maybe 3 days a week, depending upon your job and if it allows it. But what we'll use home for is doing the writing, doing the concentrating work, doing that evaluating. And what we'll use the offices for and going into the CBD is training, is collaboration, is chatting with our colleagues, you know, that social aspect of work. So it's just going to be a really interesting trend to see if these actually continue, you know, 2-3 years down the track when we really are in a post-COVID world.
Well, our lives are changing, and I agree with you that some trends will remain. think that we're not going to be going to the office as much. We'll have a much more flexible work-life balance. So therefore, living in the right location is going to be important. Living in the right sort of house where you've got a Zoom room and a backyard where the kids can play and the ability to maybe transform your garage into a gym. But for a lot of people with school-aged children, another factor is, well, where are they going to go to school? Who are going to be their mates as they grow up? How important is schools and school zones, good school zones, in selecting a property? What have you noticed in your searches?
They are hugely important. What we found, and we produce on an annual basis our school zones report. So this cuts house price data by public school catchment zones for primary and secondary school. The boundary, and what we found in this research, is the boundary of a public school zone can influence property decisions. And I think, you know, particularly when we're in an environment where we've got weak wages growth, you know, the cost of private school fees and escalating house prices, I think that places even additional pressure on the public school system and particular school catchment zones. When we did this research, what we had a look at is firstly, the percentage of school zones that increased in property price. And largely, we found the majority of school catchment zones in our cities, but also in our regional areas, increased in house prices. That's what we would expect because we've got a rising property market across Australia. But the interesting one was we had a look at the school catchment zone and the impact and difference of price growth in neighbouring school catchment zones. And there were some that were neighbouring school catchment zones when they even varied in the direction of price growth. So what that suggests is the school catchment zone is having some influence on prices. But then we also had a look at the growth in house prices in the school catchment zone and compared it to the growth of the suburb in which the school catchment zone is located. And across our cities, we saw 46% of primary and secondary school catchment zones outperformed the respective suburb in which they are located in. And most of those saw an up to 10% additional house price growth compared to the suburb. So, you know, I think what's interesting this year compared to last year, we kind of predicted last year what we would see is lifestyle locations and regional school catchment zones would see a greater increase in house prices. And that's what we've seen this year.
So we've actually published those catchment zone details for Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and nationally on Property Update. And I'll leave a link in the show note and links to your domain report. I've found it fascinating. Of course, there's nothing new about this, but at these times, people are prepared to pay an even bigger premium. There's a flight to quality.
Absolutely. I think we all, no matter what your price point is, we all place an importance on education. And there are a variety of different median house prices in the top performers. And some of them we've seen above 30% annual growth in house prices. So I think, you know, you've hit the nail on the head. It is about quality. I think we all want the best for our children. And it's not the factor, but it's one of the factors that goes into the decision-making process of when you're purchasing a home.
And it wasn't just in the high-end suburbs either, was it?
No, it was across a variety of different price points. One of the interesting cities was Brisbane. So largely what we found, it was really that outer suburbs, you know, the family-dominated areas, the development areas where it's more affordable to purchase a detached family home where you've got a backyard, they were seeing some of the biggest growth in school catchment zone house prices.
Now, Nicola, wages haven't gone up much this year. Property values have gone up considerably. And for that reason, as we started to say earlier on, affordability is becoming an issue. But for a lot of people, the houses have actually earned more than they have over the last year. Where are the suburbs in your reports where house price growth has outstripped annual wages growth?
We've seen 33% of suburbs included in the analysis have a higher growth rate than the annual household income. And when you have a look at the suburbs in which they are, most of them are in kind of New South Wales and Tasmania. They had the highest proportion of suburbs that had house price growth exceeding household income. But for some examples, Dover Heights in Sydney, in the city in East, had just over $1 million more greater increase in property price versus the household income. Bronte as well had just over $1 million more gross in house prices versus what that household income was. So some extraordinary changes, and, you know, just goes to show picking the right suburb can pay dividends.
Definitely.
So, Michael, you know, it's been such an extraordinary year that we've lived through, and I'm really interested to know, what has been your biggest surprise?
My biggest surprise, Nicola? Well, it was around this time last year, October last year, that I called the bottom of the property cycle, or the beginning of the upturn of the cycle. We were still locked down in Melbourne, but sentiment had changed. And so my team on the ground had noticed the sentiment change. We noticed more inquiries into our business. We noticed properties were selling quicker. And so I called the upturn of the cycle then, but I really, really didn't expect to see the significant amount of growth that property values have had over the last 12 months. Now, you asked my biggest surprise. I guess I should have said that I'm still in lockdown in Melbourne, because nowhere would I have believed that that would still be the case well over, is it 300 days or 200? I've lost track. I've stopped counting, and it doesn't really matter. What I have also noticed is that people haven't worried about that. They've actually just gone on with their property decisions, whether it's their home buying or their investment decision. And in all the cycles I've invested in, I don't ever remember having such a unified response. Other than the CBDs, all the property markets have performed very, very strongly. So the big surprise is how fast and how quickly the cycle has taken off, how generalized it is. And then the most recent surprise is how suddenly mood and sentiment changed from our regulators, from our banks, from our federal treasurer. Even the International Monetary Fund had to get a say and say unaffordability is an issue, the debt to income levels is high. And every property cycle I've been involved in has ended because of either rising interest rates or the restraint of credit. It's been due to money rather than affordability. There's always been some sort of interference. So my concern is the surprise at the moment is that the regulators may step in sooner rather than later, and they're going to have unintended consequences, as seems to have happened every time they've gotten involved. They're going to stop the first-time buyer if they're going to start being concerned about debt-to-income levels, because first-time buyers have to take on more debt, Nicola. They're actually going to advantage the higher-income households who have multiple streams of income and are going to be able to borrow, and they've got more equity in their homes as they upgrade, so they don't have to take higher debt-to-income loans. They're the couple of the big surprises I've had this year.
And I absolutely agree with all of those. Like, I don't think I ever imagined to see such a rebound in terms of what we saw this year, in terms of the level of transactions. But also, I think one of the surprises for me is that it's taken us this long to realize there's a better working model in terms of our ways of working and the ability to work from home. With technology where it was, I am surprised that we didn't adopt this sooner. And I think what the pandemic has helped us to do is fast track that and prove that it is a great working model and allows people to have a much better work-life balance.
I think it's allowed business owners, employers, to trust their employees. It allowed them to work from home. All my team, other than the receptionist in the office, are working from home, part-time, flexible hours. Some are locked down still and aren't able to not work from home. Having said that, no one checks on them. They're getting their work done. It shows their dedication to their jobs. And I think things are going to remain this way. I think one of the interesting things is that dress code has changed. Dress code, even amongst real estate agents, has changed. You don't need to put a suit and tie on when you work from home. People are enjoying the benefits of that. Clearly, we're still going to have to work in the office sometimes. Clearly, we are social beings and wanting to get out. So that's a restriction. But there's a happy medium.
There is absolutely a happy medium. And you know, you say about we're spending less, and that's actually been one of the benefits in terms of our discretionary spending has reduced. And we've seen that being diverted into our homes. And that's been one of the reasons why we've seen, and obviously with record low interest rates, one of the reasons why we've seen such great levels of demand in our housing markets.
Well, it's been a cycle of upgraders, as you said earlier on. Tenants have got choices now. Some are wanting, because rents are cheaper, to be able to move to better accommodation. A lot of them have become first home buyers. And I think that's a really, really good thing that's happened this year. The huge level of people getting a foothold on the property market. I see a lot of millennials moving out of apartments, moving into homes now because they're the family formation age. A lot of established home buyers thinking, well, do I need such a big home? I'm going to downsize, but still live in the same place close to where my family is, where my doctors and dentists and hairdressers are. It's been a cycle of upgraders. And there's also been a trend of people not going overseas now. They're buying a second holiday home, something they may have put off in the past, but they're now having a holiday home, so they've got somewhere to go this Christmas.
Yeah, some of the suburbs in those prime holiday areas, even in, you know, Mornington Peninsula, southeast Queensland, have seen some extraordinary rates of growth. And even when you look in southeast Queensland in terms of views per listing, which I think is a really good way to look at the level of demand versus the supply on the market, all of in, you know, southeast Queensland, all of those lifestyle, real coastal suburbs have seen strong levels of views per listing. So the demand is definitely still there for those lifestyle homes.
Well, it'll be interesting to get back together again soon and see, as we are out of lockdown, how our world's going to move on. Thanks for your time. Now, I enjoy reading your research on Domain and that of the other property journalists there. You've got a wealth of data to work with, so it's always interesting to see your perspectives on it. Catch up real soon. Thanks, Nicola.
Thank you.
In a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you. Well, I'm going to teach you how to appreciate what you have. And I got the idea for this chat from a British property podcast, but I'll explain that to you in a moment. Having had a chat with Nicola Powell now, and from my blogs, and what you're hearing about property, I'm sure you recognise that property has now moved to the next stage of a property cycle. And that means that not all properties will help you develop the financial freedom you're looking for. Of course, over the years, not all properties have ever been investment grade. In fact, we believe less than 4% of the properties on the market are what I'd call investment grade. But it actually takes more than that to become financially free through property. I believe it's really difficult to make sound financial decisions unless you know what you want. So if you don't have a plan to get you to where you want to get to, you're going to end up defaulting by, I don't know, doing what other people do or listening to what other people say, and that doesn't usually result in success for them nor for you. So if you choose my team at Metropole to help you become financially free through property, we always start by putting a strategic property plan together for you. Why not go to metropole.com.au, find out about what we do, leave us your details and have a chat, and let's see, a no-obligation chat, to see how we can help you. Now, our services don't suit everybody, and if they don't, we'll tell you, but we help both beginning investors and experienced investors grow, protect and pass on their wealth. And as I just said, it all starts with putting a plan together, and then we help you implement the plan. By the way, we don't sell properties, but you may choose to use our buyer's agent services, property management, renovations, development, financial planning, wealth advisory. There's a range of services, including business advisory, to help you. Go to metropole.com.au, leave us your details, and I'd love to be part of your ongoing wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
Today, in my mindset message, I'd like to talk to you about ways to improve your life satisfaction. And I got the concept for today's chat from a blog I read from Rob Dix, who interestingly runs a British property podcast. And I was interested to read that he said that happiness is the art of wanting what you already have. Isn't that interesting? Let me repeat that. I think it's worth it. Happiness is the art of wanting what you already have. Now, somehow without trying, I think I've actually got this attitude. I'm happy with my life. When I'm at home in Melbourne, I'm happy here in Melbourne. When Pam and I travel overseas, not that we've done it this year, when we're traveling, I never want to come back. I'm happy with that. I'm happy with the food I've chosen at the restaurants. I think it's actually quite good. I don't actually say, oh, gee, that meal over there looks good. I don't want to swap my problems for somebody other problems when things go wrong either. In other words, the grass is always greener on my side of the fence than it is on the other side of the fence. And that's good. I'm happy pretty much of the time, and I don't really experience any sort of jealousy. Now, I know you could be saying, well, that's easy for you, Michael, because you've been lucky or you've achieved a lot and you're wealthy, and you're entirely right. But I also know plenty of extremely unhappy people with great material wealth and what others would consider wonderful lives. So I believe this wanting what you have attitude can be practiced whatever your current situation. So how do you do this? Well, I think the first thing you should do is practice noticing what's great about what you've got. You see, our mind has evolved to notice what's not good about our current situation, and that's on purpose to help us strive to improve. I think about it. If our ancestors sat around being thrilled that they had one bucket of grain to last them through the whole winter, none of us would be here today. So we unconsciously go through our day noticing that our house is too small, our children are being difficult, our job is dreary. So to counter this, my suggestion is to develop the habit of noticing what's great about what you've got. Your house is situated in a great suburb. Your kids are spirited. They're inquisitive. Your job has got great potential, and you've got the ability to then go home after your job and enjoy your life. So at the start, this is something you've sort of got to consciously force yourself to do. And I learned this technique many, many years ago. So every morning when I get up, I think of a list of things that I'm grateful for. I do that every day. And it's usually about five things. It's got to be different from the day before. Otherwise, you sort of cheat, don't you? Over time, though, this becomes a habit, crowding out the habit of noticing what you're not happy with. The second way to be more happy with what you've got in your life at the moment is to speculate about what's bad in somebody else's situation. Now, again, a natural instinct, and that's particularly more obvious today in the days of social media, is to look at somebody else's possessions or situations or jobs and want that for ourselves. It's difficult to want what we have, to be happy with what we've got when we're busy wanting what somebody else has got. So I'm going to suggest you try the habit of reverse jealousy. Go out of your way to point out what might not be so good about somebody else's situation. Wow, the logistics of staffing that business with 60, 80 employees and all the hassles that come with that, that must be a nightmare. Oh, look, that kid, he may be really good at sport, but he actually doesn't have much of a social life because every weekend he's got to be training. Oh, he must be constantly worried about his beautiful new Lamborghini car that people are going to scratch it if he takes it out in public. So now, long term, this isn't healthy. I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't be happy for other people's success. In fact, that's one of the traits of successful people, that they're happy when other people are successful. But I'm suggesting this more as a deprogramming exercise to kickstart your own satisfaction, flipping your potential jealousy for other people, noticing, hey, what's not so good about it? Because remember, we tend to see our problems in more detail than others. There's no such thing as a perfect marriage, a perfect business, a perfect job, a perfect house, a fantastic property portfolio, your perfect health, or a perfect anything, really. We've all got worries, insecurities, frustrations, needles, aches and pains, and there's a myriad of ways everyone's life is far from perfect. It's just when you've got a front row seat for these imperfections in your own life and you only see others fleetingly or from a distance, this magnifies what you see as your own problems. And of course, as I said a moment ago, social media, where people go out of their way to present a very filtered, staged, managed image of what their perfect life is, that makes it hard for us to compare what's going on with our life. So it's important to remind yourself of this frequently until you internalize it that, hey, that's not the real world. Reality TV isn't real either. Otherwise, you can never be happy with what you've got because you're never going to live up to that illusionary perception of what other people have got. Now, another thing you should do is balance happiness with a drive to improve and progress. Like I said, persistent dissatisfaction is a powerful motivator. So if you become too satisfied with your lot in life, it may end up losing your drive. So I suggest you really got to balance the two. When it comes to your possessions and your family and your standing in life, you should want what you have, making sure you keep harmful envy at bay and appreciate the small moments that you have each day. And a lot of us who've had to stay home, be more locked up through COVID, have suddenly learned to appreciate different things, haven't they? But it's also okay to be dissatisfied with your professional progress or your sporting prowess or your ability to understand a particular problem or subject or your station in life. You want to get better and you want to not compare with other people, but you want to do better for yourself. So as long as it doesn't become an obsession and sits within the framework of your overall life happiness, wanting more than you've currently got is actually a good, useful, powerful motivator. Well, I hope you learned something from today's show, and if you did, and you know somebody else who'd benefit from it, why not tell them about the Michael Yardney podcast? There's a share button on all podcast apps. You just click on share and send it to somebody, or tell somebody about the show, or tell the world by leaving a review. And my way of saying thank you to you for listening to today's show is I've got a bonus for you. I've got a bundle of books, ebooks, reports that you may be interested in. Go to podcastbonus.com.au. I'll leave a link in the show notes, podcastbonus.com.au, and collect your set of reports and ebooks. I'll be back again real soon, but you can catch me in between on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney. And in particular, why not join my private Facebook group and join thousands of others who get some daily insights from me? Go to Facebook and just look for the Property Update private Facebook group. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?